Okay, our friends. Today we are reading something completely different. It is called The King's Stilts. It was written by Dr. Seuss. It is read today by Mommy and...
Dogman!
Dogman. Woof, woof. Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, Dogman, have I got a story for you. Are you ready? Here we go. Naturally, the king never wore his stilts during business hours. When King Bertram worked, he really worked, and his stilts stood forgotten in the hall stilt closet in the castle's front hallway. Do you know what stilts are? They're long wooden poles with little bits on them that you can stand on, and they make you taller than what you really are. There was much work to be done in the kingdom of Bin that King Bertram had to get up every morning at 5. Long before the townsfolk and the farmers were awake, the king was splashing away in his bath. It was right there, in fact, that his day's work began. With his left hand, he would bathe with his royal bath brush, but his right hand had always to keep dry for signing the important papers of state. Eric, his page boy, brought in these papers on a big silver tray. He stood at attention at the foot of the tub while old Lord Droon took the papers one by one and held them over the water for his majesty to sign.
"Sign here, sign there,"
old Droon would say,
"and hurry, sire, hurry, there are hundreds more to come."
It was just the same at breakfast. The king cut and buttered his toast with only his left hand, and with his right he kept signing royal orders and commands. And by 7 every morning the king had always finished more business than most kings do in a month. He had to get all this done before 7. For that was the hour when his big work commenced. It was the most difficult and important work in the whole kingdom of Bin. This was the work for caring for the mighty dike trees that protected the people of Bin from the sea. The kingdom was a low one, the sea was a high one, and only the dike trees kept the sea from pouring in. They grew so close together in a row along the shore that they held back the water with their heavy, knotted roots. But to keep these trees strong and sturdy was not an easy task. They were more spicy than pine trees, and the roots were very tasty to a certain sort of bird. And this was a kind of giant blackbird with a sharp and pointed beak. Nizzards, they were called by the people of Bin, and these nizzards were always flying about over the dike trees, waiting for a chance to swoop down and peck. And if nobody stopped them, the roots would soon give way and they'd pour in with a terrible roar and every last soul in the kingdom would drown. That's quite a bit, isn't it? But King Bertram did not permit this to happen. He had gathered together in his kingdom the largest and the smartest cats in all the world and had trained them to chase the nizzards away. These cats were called patrol cats and wore badges that said PC.
"Everything in Bin," said King Bertram, "depends on our patrol cats. They are more important than our army, our navy, and our fire department, too, for they keep the nizzards away from the dike trees, and the dike trees keep the ocean back out of our land."
1,000 cats in all. They divided up the work. 500 guarded the kingdom by day, and the other 500 kept watch through the night. And at 7 every morning came the changing of the cat guard. And at the sound of the trumpet, the king left his breakfast and mounted his horse for the daily review. Fresh, brisk, and well-fed, the 500 day cats marched past him toward the dike trees to make up their watch. Now, at the same time, the night cats, muddy, tired, and hungry, headed home to their kennels for their 12 hours rest. There was rest for the cats. There was none for the king. And he took every minute of his morning to see that they were given the very best of care. The huts that they slept in must be kept clean and tidy, and each cat must be brushed and his whiskers trimmed just so. The cat kitchen was even bigger and grander than the king's, and the cooks who did all the cooking were the chief cooks in the land.
"Your Majesty,"
the chief in charge of fish would always say, "Tell us you think the food we feed our cats is perfect." And the king would look over the huge, wet baskets of fish, choosing only the finest and the freshest to serve his patrol cats. And so went the morning. And then all afternoon, both in the winter and the summer, and the king made his rounds by the edge of the sea. Every root of the dike tree he inspected every day. But finally, at 5 o'clock, the great task was finished. Then the king said,
"Hard day,"
he'd say.
"Full of niggardly worries. A long day,"
he'd say.
"And now it's time for some fun."
And this was the moment King Bitrim lived for. When he worked, he really worked. And when he played, oh, he really played.
"Quick, Eric,"
he'd shout.
"Quick, Eric, the stilts."
And down the slope from the dike trees, away from all the troubles, the king and Eric would race like two boys straight to the tall stilt closet in the castle's front hallway. Out came the stilts, up leapt the king, high in the air, his royal robes streaming. He'd race through the marble halls, out across the terrace, up and down the garden stairs. Black spotted coach dogs barked and romped beside him, nipping at the heels of his flashing red stilts. The townsfolk looked on from the walls and just loved it. "A grown-up king on stilts," they'd say. "Does look rather strange, but it's hard work being king, and he does his work so well. If he wants to have a bit of fun, sure, let's let him have it." But there was one man in Bin who didn't like the fun. He didn't like the games. He didn't like the laughing. His face was a scowler. This was the Lord Droon.
"Laughing spoils the shape of the face," he declared. "The lines at the corner of the mouth should go down."
And every afternoon when the stilt hour drew near, Lord Droon would slink away to his room in the Northwest Tower and sulk.
"Such carryings on,"
he would mutter in disgust. And he spied on the king from his window.
"Look at his crown, bouncing up and down on the side of his head. Look at his beard, flapping in the wind. Look at him laughing, right out in broad daylight in front of the townsfolk. I must do something about this."
And one day, he did. One Wednesday just before supper, when he thought the king was out, Lord Droon tiptoed down to the front hall. The guards at their posts were dozing. Without even the smallest sound on the hard stone floor, Droon crept to the stilt closet, pulled back the ancient door, and reached in. It took only a second. He had the king's stilts. He unbuttoned the top of his long robe and shoved them down inside. Then he sneaked past the guards again and slipped through the door. Down the steep, slanting stairway, Lord Droon marched with the stilts down to the furnace to burn them.
"This is the end of the king's foolish stilt walking,"
he mumbled to himself. And then suddenly, from around the bend and the stairs below came the sound of happy whistling. The king? Lord Droon stopped still, almost frozen with fright. He tugged and pulled at his long flowing gown, struggling to cover the stilts, but he couldn't. The ends were too long and stuck out.
"Droon, Droon," gasped Lord Droon. "You'll be caught."
He turned and fled back up the stairway. Nearer and nearer came the king, but Droon couldn't climb any faster. The stilts clattered. They banged against his knees. He looked up and saw a window. Stepping up to it quickly, he poked his head out. He looked down into an alley. A small boy was passing. It was Eric, the page boy.
"Psst, you!
Lord Droon hissed in a hoarse, nervous whisper. Eric looked up, astonished.
"Yes, sir?"
He bowed politely.
"Take these stilts,"
commanded Lord Droon.
"Take them away. Bury them deep where no one can ever find them. Bury them down by the sea, by the dike trees."
Lord Droon flung the stilts from the window.
The king's stilts?
bury them? Eric didn't know what to think. It will spoil His Majesty's fun, he stammered.
You impudent, said Lord Droon harshly. I said bury those stilts. And what's more, young man, don't you ever come back or I'll have you locked up. I'll have no impudent boy around this castle.
But I'm the king's own page boy, gasped Eric, hardly able to understand this dreadful command.
You were the king's own page boy, snapped Lord Droon.
And he pulled in his head and slammed down the window. And I can see your face. This is very concerning. Sometimes there are bad people out there in the wide, wide world, and they will ask you to do things that are not kind or right. But if you know who you are, you will not be tricked by them. Stand firm in who you are. You are an awesome kid. You don't have to do what they say to do. And guess what? Neither does he. Let's see what he does. Oh, dear. He has fallen for the trap. Never before had Eric been so puzzled. Never in his life had he felt so sad. There is nothing to do but obey the command. Uh-oh. He picked up the stilts and walked straight toward the road that led to the sea. It was the hour that the townsfolk were all having supper. No one saw him dig the deep hole. No one saw him bury the stilts. At 5 the next afternoon, the halls of the castle echoed with the king's mournful shouts.
Droon! Droon! They're gone! They're gone!
The king stood groping in the empty stilt closet, hopelessly searching for what wasn't there. Lord Droon chuckled to himself. He had anticipated this to happen and was ready with his lie.
It was the townsfolk who did it, he said, peering into the stilt closet and pretending to be greatly shocked. I have seen them every day, plotting behind the castle walls. A king, they say, should behave like a king and sit with pomp and dignity upon his royal throne. A king, they say, should never walk on stilts. It's too bad, Your Majesty, but you must try to do without them.
King Bertram answered with a heartbroken sigh.
Well, I'll try to do without them.
But he couldn't. Day after day, he grew sadder and sadder. For long hours, he'd just sit, idly drumming with his fingers on the arms of his throne. He couldn't keep his mind on his work. His commands to the patrol cats seemed feeble and faint, and the cats seemed to know it and wouldn't obey. And day by day, they grew lazier and lazier, uncombed and unbrushed. They slept most of the day and grew fat, and no one bothered to put their PC badges on them. For as chases of nizzards, they weren't worth a thing, and day by day, the nizzards grew bolder and bolder, and they cackled and fluttered over the dike trees, and they flew down and almost seemed to sneer at the lazy, sleeping cats. The townsfolk began to feel frightened. Housewives couldn't keep their minds on their housework, and they heard nizzards flapping over their rooftops and poked their heads out for a look. If the cats don't keep those nizzards away from our dike trees, they said to one another, what will keep the ocean back from our land? And bootmakers couldn't keep their minds on their boots, and goldsmiths couldn't keep their minds on their gold, and cart drivers couldn't keep their minds on where they were going, and they'd stop their carts in the road and talk in low and excited whispers. Look at those izzards. Look at those nizzards. Where are the cats? Where are the cats?
I'll tell you where the cats are. Everywhere they shouldn't be, and mostly fast asleep.
Something's wrong with the king?
Yes, something's certainly wrong with the king,
but only Eric, the page boy, knew what was wrong. Night after night, he tossed in his bed, thinking of the stilts lying deep underground. And finally, one night, he could stand it no longer. Droon or no Droon, he would go to the king. Excellent work, Eric. Do not be deceived by that Lord Droon. You should do what's right.
Gruff.
That's right.
Salute.
At dawn the next day, he leapt out of bed and made straight for the castle. Breathless and panting, he raced through the royal streets and up the broad stairs. The king was strolling sadly on the terrace with Lord Droon and two guards. Eric rushed up. He must tell the king. Droon or no Droon, he was going to tell. But Lord Droon saw him coming and stepped quickly forward. "Impudent boy, what are you doing here?" Before Eric could answer and push past him to the king, Lord Droon had grabbed him. He looked at Eric sharply, and suddenly the corners of his face turned up in a grin, a shrewd, evil grin.
"Your face,"
he said.
"What's wrong with your face?"
My face? Said Eric. He rubbed his hand over his forehead. It was merely hot and moist from running. "Nothing is at all wrong with my face."
"It's red,"
said Lord Droon, with the sly look he always had when he lied.
"It's awfully, awfully red. Measles!" he shouted. "Ho, guards, take him away. Lock him up."
"I haven't measles any more than you have," shouted Eric. "It's a trick. A nasty, dronish trick. Let me talk to the king."
But they dragged poor Eric, fighting and kicking away from the king and down the castle stairs. 5 minutes later, Eric found himself locked up in an old deserted house at the edge of town. From his second-story window, he could see two guards, spears crossed just below him, barring the door. And through the roof, he could hear the voices of the lizards. Their beaks were as hard as iron and scratched through the air. Eric shuddered. There must be a way to escape. Round and round the room, he paced, thinking and thinking. He went to the window and looked down again. Then he whistled softly. He had an idea. Very quick, Eric slipped off his belt. He pushed the end through the buckle and made a lasso. Then he leaned from the window and aimed for the spear points. He dropped the loop. It caught. He jerked the belt tight and tied a quick knot.
"Look, guards, look!" shouted Eric as he jumped on the windowsill. "Your spears are tied together."
If the guards had dropped their spears, they could have caught him in a second. But they didn't. They just yelled at each other and yanked and tugged, stupidly trying to pull the spears apart. By the time they finally had them untied, Eric had sprung to the treehouse, the tree outside his window, slid down the trunk, and quietly escaped. Eric ran through backyards and alleyways to escape the angry guards. The streets were deserted, no people at all. They were all at home, trembling with their window shades pulled down. The air was full of the chittering and the chattering of lizards. They were cutting through the clouds and like flying black knives, flying nearer, flying lower, down to the earth to eat the dike tree roots, soon to let the sea pour in. Eric ran. He turned a corner. He stopped and stared with horror. Flowing gently toward him down the sloping alley came a little trickling stream.
"Water,"
he whispered hoarsely. He dipped in his finger. It tasted of salt.
"Seawater."
One dike tree must already have been eaten clean through.
"Not a second to lose," gasped Eric. "I must dig up the stilts."
Up to the hill of the dike trees where the king's stilts lay buried, right into the very thick of the lizards. They flapped and screeched about him. They hissed as he dug.
"Gritch, gritch,"
snarled the lizards.
"Gritch to you,"
snapped back Eric, furiously pelting them with fistfuls of mud. The harder they fought him, the faster he dug. His fingers touched the stilts at last. He pulled them from the ground, stilts bouncing on his shoulder. Again, Eric ran. The road to the castle took him back through the town. The streets were still deserted. Close by the door of an old tailor shop, Eric stopped for an instant to rest. The stilts had begun to hurt his shoulder.
Those two stupid guards, he thought. I wonder where they are.
He found out all too soon. From around the corner at this very elbow, suddenly bellowed the angry voice of old Lord Droon.
You guards! Guards, indeed! To let a little pipsqueak of a boy tie up your spears, dunderheads! Search every street! Search every house!
Eric heard the clatter of their heavy hobnail boots. No time to run. Nowhere to hide. Wait! These clothes in the tailor shop. Eric ducked inside. An instant later, Lord Droon and the guards appeared around the corner.
Search that tailor shop first, commanded Lord Droon.
But just as he said this, out of the shop strode a strange, tall man. There was something very odd about the hang of his robe. His hat had pulled down far over his eyes.
Those eyes, muttered Droon. Have I seen them before?
He stepped in front of the tall man, blocking his path. The tall man's mouth went suddenly dry.
Are you?
He stammered hoarsely.
Are you by any chance seeking a small boy with no pelt? Which way?
Shouted the guards.
Which way did he go?
That way, said Eric, as he nodded off towards the sea. With the clatter of hobnails, the two guards were off, Lord Droon sputtering and scolding along behind them. Oh, he disguised himself. It's Eric as the tall man, pretending to be someone else. Very clever. He must be standing on the stilts.
No time to shrink down to a boy again, thought Eric. I'll have to stay a tall man.
And on to the castle, Eric raced in his disguise, over fences and thickets, through orchards and fields of corn. Everywhere he saw patrol cats, useless and limp, fast asleep on haystacks, dozing in the trees. And then suddenly, just ahead, he saw the king. The king was sitting on a little pile of stones just outside the castle gate. His robe wasn't pressed. His crown wasn't shined. He had deep, sad circles under both of his eyes.
Your Majesty! Your Majesty!
Shouted Eric as he clattered up behind him. The king paid no attention. Eric leaned down and shouted right into his ear. Very slowly, the king turned his head.
Well, sighed King Bertram. And who may you be?
I'm Eric,
shouted Eric, cried Eric. And he let the robe that was covering him drop to the ground, and the king's own red stilts flashed bright in the sun. And down from the stilts leapt Eric, the page boy. Up onto the stilts sprang Bertram the king. He drew a great kingly breath. The first one in weeks. His head shot up high. His chest broadened wide. Bertram of Bin was sturdy, straight, and strong again, and every inch a king.
Patrol, cats!
It was the loudest command ever shouted in Bin. The king's voice seemed to roll up from deep in his boots. It echoed down the valleys. It rumbled through the hills. From wherever they wandered, the cats heard the call. They fell in line. They fell in step. They marched ahead 1,000 strong. Up the hill to the dike trees, they followed Eric and the king.
Day cats to the left flank. Night cats to the right. Charge!
The king shouted. 100,000 nizzards stopped their pecking and sprang to meet the charge. The dike trees shook as the cats roared their war cry. Ready?
Meow!
Meow! Uh-oh, there's a dog here too. All right. The sea's surface swirled into raging whirlpools. The noise was heard in Sombaland, 500 miles away. The fur flew fast. But the feathers flew faster. It only took 10 minutes. The kingdom was saved. The townsfolk stopped trembling indoors behind their window shades. They rushed out from their houses and filled the air with cheers. And then the king punished Droon in a most fitting way. He sent him to live by himself with a guard of patrol cats in that old deserted house that had the sign measles. And he made him eat nizzards 3 times every day. Stewed nizzards for breakfast, cold nizzards for lunch, and fried nizzards for supper. And every other Thursday, they served him nizzard hash. But to Eric, the page boy, the king gave a fine and just reward. He ordered the royal carpenter to make another pair of stilts, tall stilts, red and flashing like his own. And from then on, every day at 5, they always raced on stilts together. And then they played. And when they played, they really played. And when they worked, they really worked. And the cats kept the nizzard away from the dike trees, and the dike trees kept the water back out of the land. And that is the end of this very silly story. Dog Man approves. The end.
If you like the show, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. It really does help the show to grow. Thank you for listening.